Mark calling Orson. Come in, Orson. Mark calling Orson. Come in, Orson. Orson, where the fuck are you? Hey, does anyone even remember that reference? It's from the TV show Mork and Mindy that ran from 1978 to 1982 with the great Robin Williams as the wacky alien Mork and Pam Dauber as Mindy. It was actually a spinoff of the TV show Happy Days, which was co-created by the big-time director-writer Gary Marshall. Yes, that same Gary Marshall that I met in the bathroom at Tom Colicchio's Craft Restaurant in Century City. I mentioned that story before, but man, what a legend. And he took the time to talk to me in the restroom while we were washing hands. But yeah, I just lit up when I saw him. I was like, oh my God, Gary Marshall. But back to Mork calling Orson. Mork would end each episode by closing his eyes and contacting this invisible being from another planet named Orson. Orson was heard, but never actually seen in the series. And quickly on another Orson, another large planet, Orson Welles. Check out the outtakes for a Paul Masson wine commercial where he's just shit-faced. Sitting there, he's ruddy-looking, he's a massive man. And at the beginning, the director yells, action. And Orson is just kind of sitting there for what seems like an eternity. And he looks over to the guy holding a bottle next to him, and he kind of slurs to the director,
he doesn't do anything?
But yeah, he's just completely blasted. And his delivery is just comical, but also kind of sad. But hopefully he was having fun. But anyway, he's just like,
mwah, for the French champagne. There's a California champagne by Paul Masson, inspired by that same French excellence. It's fermented in the bottle.
But yeah, at this point, Orson Welles was probably fermenting himself, and he was possibly flammable. But yeah, Robin Williams, what an insane genius of a comedian. Famously improvisational and hyperactive. And he also had a cocaine problem, which didn't help things back in the day, like so many other people. And he sadly came down with Lewy body dementia, a progressive neurological disorder that affects thinking, movement, and mood. He eventually committed suicide in 2014 in his Marin County home. And I read a quote for where a friend had run into Robin Williams in like 2011. And the quote was, something is off. That sparkle in his eye is gone. And obviously, Robin Williams knew he was losing his memory and his sharpness. And, you know, I can't blame him for giving up, but I do wish he would have stuck around. Check out 1991's The Fisher King, kind of a masterpiece directed by Monty Python's Terry Gilliam, with Jeff Bridges as a bit of an asshole radio shock jock who inadvertently provokes a caller into murdering a group of people in a bar. And one of the women killed was the wife of the Robin Williams character, who's like mentally devastated by the loss. He becomes homeless and he spends his time searching for the mythical Holy Grail. Jeff Bridges meets Robin Williams and he tries to get some redemption by helping Robin Williams out on his quest. And there's a hilarious part where Robin Williams is like taking off his clothes outdoors and he's encouraging Jeff Bridges to do the same. And Robin Williams is like talking about taking off his underpants and he's like, free up the little guy, let him flap in the breeze. So rest in peace, Robin. And let's start with a great quote from the writer Anne Rice. Don't bend, don't water it down, don't try to make it logical. Don't edit your own soul according to the fashion. Rather, follow your most intense obsessions mercilessly. Thank you for that quote, Mrs. Rice. I mean, don't try to make it logical? That could be my motto. And also, it's kind of like, pretty much sums up life. Don't try and make it logical. So anyway, let's begin.
You are my density. You are my density.
So I have discovered the two words that everyone eventually says when looking at the mirror at their aging face. What happened? I mean, I'm okay with aging. All of my heroes are weathered. But in a few years, shit, I may start looking like Samuel Beckett. Minus, of course, his fantastic shock of hair. Holy shit, until the end, that dude had the best hair ever. And I love the Samuel Beckett quote, you're on Earth, there's no cure for that, which I've said before, but I just always try to bring that up again. And kind of to borrow the Ernest Hemingway quote, you grow old gradually and then suddenly. And I came up with a couple possible titles for the autobiography I will never write. Everybody knows I'm trying. Or alternately, everybody knows I'm tiring. That one may be more appropriate, to be honest. So I came up with a joke that is possibly great or possibly the worst joke ever. or possibly both. But let's start with an actual great one-liner from the genius comedian Stephen Wright. If at first you don't succeed, then skydiving definitely isn't for you. So here's my joke or attempt at one. Again, it's weird, but let's try it out. Okay, so Jake and Dave, two normal-looking guys, walk into a casino. Jake then turns to Dave and says, "Okay, let's take our dicks out." Dave looks at him aghast and says, "What are you talking about?" And Jake then says, "Okay, forget it. Let's just go play some blackjack." And speaking of another famous dick, you will not believe this goddamn story. So John Wayne Bobbitt was a dickhead rapist bully who got his dick cut off by his kind of awesome wife, Lorena Bobbitt. So she cut off his dick and then like went driving with it and threw it out a window into a field in Virginia. I mean, let's just think about that for a minute. A cut off dick sitting in a field. That is like insane. Anyway, she called 911 eventually and she told her that, you know, she cut off this guy's dick, where it could be found, who the guy's dick that she cut off was, blah, blah, blah. And yes, the dick was found and was somehow reattached during a 9.5-hour operation. I guess his dick was functional and he went on to star in a couple of porno movies, including a horribly titled porno called Frankenpenis. Anyway, he's a bit of a scumbag. And the guy has bad luck. In 2024, he got all of his toes amputated, possibly due to issues while he worked at the infamously toxic military base camp, Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. And I remember the endless commercials for like lawyers that, you know, that were like, "Did you ever work at Camp Lejeune? Contact the legal firm of blah, blah, blah." So anyway, long story short, there's a pun in there somewhere about his dick getting cut off. But anyway, when I was in nursing school in Ashburn, Virginia, I went to a dermatologist, and the doctor named David Berman was, get this, the guy who reattached John Wayne Bobbitt's penis. No lie. He was actually a totally cool doctor, and he'll definitely be the guy I go to if my dick ever gets cut off. And weirdly enough, a different David Berman, who I mentioned before, was the lead singer of the band The Silver Jews. He eventually committed suicide, such a talented, tragic, and tormented figure. And there's a cool song by The Silver Jews called The Frontier Index. Here's a taste of that verse from that. And, you know, so many songs use the same chord structures and they sound differently. I mean, it's kind of amazing. I know there's only so many musical notes, but a great song by the New York City band The Strokes called Ode to the Mets has the same chord structure. But anyway, let's start with the Silver Jews song.
Of all the people I knew, I always looked up to you. And after millions of years of crime, the sun still shines and shines.
So here's that Stroke song with the same kind of structure.
Innocent time, out on his own. Not gonna do that, fuck, I'm out of control. I was just bored, playing the guitar. Learned all your tricks, wasn't too hard. It's the last one now, I can promise you that. I'm gonna find out the truth when I get back.
Rest in peace, David Berman, the musician, and dermatologist David Berman. I hope you're doing well. And one of my faithful listeners, who I will call Monsieur Hornbeck, asked me the other day, "Hey, what was some of the movies that you put on the list for that girl that liked the movie Wings of Desire?" So for you, Monsieur, I put on the list another Wim Wenders movie, Paris, Texas, and also Leo Carras' great Lovers on the Bridge. Please watch any of Leo's Carras movies. He's so goddamn cinematic, it's wild. And also the Three Colors trilogy, three movies by Krzysztof Kieślowski, Blue, White, and Red. They're arty but great. And Kieślowski also directed a masterful Polish miniseries called Decalogue, which was like 10 one-hour films, each inspired by one of the Ten Commandments, but told in a modern setting. It was made in 1989. I still think about it. And speaking of Monsieur Hornbeck, one day I will have a dinner party with my friends, including Monsieur Hornbeck, Captain Philbrook, Professor Buckley, Dr. Leclerc, and Reverend Efron. And I will come as the Peter Falk character, Columbo, and finally get to the bottom of which one of these motherfuckers stole the upside-down cake. That's a callback to an earlier episode. So let's see. Let's get to a semblance of a story here. I was listening to some songs by the utter genius Elvis Costello, and he has a song that is just completely connected to a somewhat traumatic experience in my past. So I've mentioned this horrific relationship with a girl in Los Angeles once. We only went out for maybe 6 months at most, but we would break up, get back together, and so on and so on. So basically, on our last night out, we first went to this amazing little dive bar called the Daily Pint on Pico Boulevard. They're still around. They have like over 500 different whiskeys. So yeah, we drank a bit, maybe argued a little bit, and then drove down to just one of my all-time favorite, truly amazing dive bars, one of the best ever, called the Speakeasy, also down on Pico Boulevard in Santa Monica. It's no longer open, but man, what a spot with a couple pool tables and a good jukebox. I remember this incredible bartender. I think her name was Ruthie. And some bartenders just have the greatest personalities. You know, you kind of have to have one to be a great bartender. I mean, you're always talking with people and bullshitting. And if you're a good bartender, you'd probably be a good psych nurse, to be honest. So anyway, we had a few drinks there, and we were just so close to the breaking point. The tension was like fucking palpable. And again, I know I view everything as if it were a movie, but this definitely had an impending sense of doom, kind of a Paul Schrader type vibe. So anyway, yeah, that night they were doing karaoke, and my girlfriend had sang just an awful out-of-tune rendition of Sade's song, The Sweetest Taboo, which I've always fucking hated. And of course, whenever I see the singer Sade, which was spelled S-A-D-E, but pronounced Sade, I think of the hilarious scene from the kind of great 1995 David Fincher movie Seven, with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman trying to catch a serial killer who was using the seven deadly sins as his motives for killing. But there's a hilarious scene where they're at a library looking at these old books, and Morgan Freeman pulls out a book by the dark and depraved Marquis de Sade, also spelled S-A-D-E, and the not-too-bright Brad Pitt character says, Marquis de Sade? But Seven also just has the gut-wrenching line near the end where Brad Pitt's yelling, What's in the box? That's just one of the most memorable and tragic lines ever in a movie. So yeah, back to that night. We kept drinking, and then I sang some karaoke, and here's where Elvis Costello comes in. I sang the great song Allison, one of my go-tos for karaoke, and I did it pretty well. I mean, the DJ even commented on like how in tune I was. So that was a victory. And here's just the chorus from that.
Allison, I know this world is killing you. Oh, Allison, my aim is true.
So anyway, at some point, my soon-to-be ex-girlfriend went up to get us some drinks at the bar, and she started talking for too long to some guy at the bar. She was kind of looking over at me. I stared at them with fucking daggers in my eyes. Speaking of daggers in my eyes, remind me of the movie Scanners in a moment. And I went over to her and grabbed my drink and was like, hey, come on, we're heading out soon. Let's finish our drinks and get out of here, okay? Maybe we're over, but let's exit this place with some fucking class and dignity, okay? She stayed over that night, but we were basically history. And this relationship occurred kind of at the same time my editing career was starting to implode. And I stayed with this girl, even though it was awful at times. I mean, we had some okay times too, you know, of course. But because I was so worried about what I was going to do with my life at this time. And I was like, you know what? I just need to have someone around right now. It wasn't smart. But, you know, sometimes even something slightly terrible is better than nothing, you know. And I'm sure you understand that concept. But yeah, it was a twisted relationship. She was fairly cruel to me, to be honest. And hey, I'm not bullshitting you. I haven't been like the perfect boyfriend to all my girlfriends or something. But I've never intentionally been mean to someone. I mean, we all let our emotions get the best of us at times. But it's best to try and be, you know, civil as possible, even if you're angry with someone. And oh yes, Scanners from 1981, directed by David Cronenberg with the amazing Michael Ironside. He's one of the guys that have these like telepathic abilities called scanning. And basically, scanning just kind of looks like someone staring at someone else kind of insanely with your face shaking and shit, forcing others to do things, you know, that they don't want to do. And there's a legendary scene where Michael Ironside uses his scanning powers to explode another person's head. And the classic ending scene is where the two scanners are fighting. One is good, one is evil, and like Michael Ironside is making the most amazing intense faces, veins and shit start popping out of their faces, and one dude's head lights on fire. I mean, it's not a great movie, but the scanning scenes are totally make it worthwhile. Okay, I think we can wrap this short one up. Let's end with some quotes I've read recently, kind of about perseverance and kind of just the fact that we're all a little bit weird, goddamn fascinating creatures at times. So first, Roger Federer, the retired tennis great, recently said at a graduation ceremony, "In the 1,526 singles matches I played in my career, I won almost 80% of those matches. Now I have a question for all of you. What percentage of the points do you think I won in those matches?" 54%. In other words, even top-ranked tennis players win barely more than half of the points they play. The truth is, whatever game you play in life, sometimes you're going to lose a point, a match, a season, a job. I really like that quote. And lastly, the brilliant theater critic from the New York Times, Jesse Green, did a review of a new play version of James Joyce's ultimate stream of consciousness book, Ulysses, famously about the trials of everyday life, the beautiful moments, the profane moments. It reads, "This is what Ulysses shows us, that however conventional the face we present to the world, lower down or an inch beneath, we are all hungry bodies, sucklers, defecators, perverts. We wander lost within our grossest needs and float on our effusions, not on Homer's wine-dark sea, but Joyce's snot-green one. Hilariously, we are heroes just the same." Wow, that's pretty good. And let's circle back to Elvis Costello with just an upbeat but also highly ironic song entitled "The Other Side of Summer" from the 1991 album Mighty Like a Rose. It's catchy, clever, and creative like most of Elvis Costello's stuff. So let's give this a shot. "The sun struggles up another beautiful day, and I felt glad in my own suspicious way. Yeah, 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 despite the contradiction and confusion, felt tragic without reason. There's malice and there's magic in every season, from the foam and breakers on the poison to surf. The other side of summer, to the burning forests and the hills of astroturf. The other side of summer, the other side of summer."